G'day everyone and welcome to the Baffle Days podcast. This is episode 12 with me, Tom O'Halloran, and my co-host and partner, Amanda Watts. Today we are going to unpack the recent Australian National Climbing Championships that happened about 10 days ago now from recording. To help us do that, we've got a couple of Australian climbing legends, Rob and Carly LeBreton. Rob LeBreton from episode 8 fame and also all of his years of amazing climbing achievements. And Carly LeBreton as well for decades of extremely strong climbing achievements in Australia. And she was also the head route setter of the comp. We'll unpack basically everything from results and then get into a bit of the nitty-gritty details and why this was important in terms of the significance in Australian climbing and the Olympics and all that sort of stuff. So
it was a pretty interesting comp, and I think Robbie and Carly can jump in at any point with this. So from my memory of lots of competition, this is the first time we've had lead, speed and boulder all in one comp, all stacked up together. Would that be right?
I think so.
For the seniors, yeah.
Yeah, so it's happened for juniors before.
So for juniors, certainly happened before quite a few times.
But for open competitors. And it's complicated because you had some people just competing in boulder, just competing in speed and just competing in lead. And then you had a lot of competitors competing in the combined, which means they had to compete in all three. And to compete in the all three and get an Australian ranking, you had to be an Australian citizen.
Yeah, that's correct. So, and we also had some Australian citizens that were under the official age, so they were there as being invited so that they could get that competition experience at a higher level. So we had our overall ranking, then there was the Australian ranking, and then the official Australian ranking, which didn't include the younger.
Yeah, I think to use me as an example for that, I think I ended up 11th in bouldering, but then ended up ranked 8th in Australia because you had to take the juniors out and Charlotte, international competitor, out. And so that ended up with a ranking of 8th.
Nice job.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Excellent. And it's not a combined ranking because you can only use combined with the combined format. Mm-hmm. So it's an overall ranking. So the Sport Climbing Australia had to be really particular about the wording they used for that.
Yeah, okay.
I was wondering about that actually. Yeah, because it didn't come up as combined. So that needs to be done, and perhaps we can get into this in a little bit.
That's right.
The combined
as
format.
The Olympic format to call it a combined event. It's a very specific thing.
So that's
now.
Why they said overall ranking, not combined ranking.
Yeah.
Oh, head exploded already. Yeah.
So I guess basically a brief overview of how the weekend ran.
Oh, I think we do need to say though, the reason they ran the combined format was because this was the event that qualified qualified athletes for the Olympic selection event, which is our continental championship on the 28th and 29th of March.
Yep,
that's right.
Yeah, that's correct. So this was the best chance that Australians had to qualify for that event. And to kind of complicate things a little bit more, we had a few youth B climbers who next year will be old enough. Angie Scarth-Johnson's like an obvious example. So even though she was youth B and technically not old enough for the Australian Championships this year, she was old enough to earn that qualification place in the Continental Championships next year. So that's, things are being an Olympic sport. Things are getting way more serious and interesting. It's fantastic, I reckon.
And that's partly why we wanted to record this episode, is because it's changed the face of competition climbing in Australia.
Yeah, it's definitely something really different. Yeah, because, there's people there that are there to try and win their individual disciplines or do as best as they can in the individual disciplines as they would any other year. But also there's a whole group of athletes that are trying to begin their Olympic journey. So the overall placing at the end of the event was super significant for them. So bird's eye view of the weekend, it was St. Peter's Climbing Gym. And we had Thursday, Friday as the bouldering portion of the event. So day one was the qualification for semi-finals. Top 20 in that went through to the semi-finals on Friday. Top 8 then went through to... Top 6. Brush up on my competition knowledge. Top 6 goes through to finals. And then Saturday, Sunday was at Villawood. It's a and that was Saturday. That was the lead qualification, two routes, speed climbing in its entirety.
Yep, the entire event, qualification, then final rounds.
Yeah, that was done on the Saturday afternoon. Thursday was...
Sunday.
Gosh, end of the day.
It's all a blur, Tom.
We will edit that bit.
And then on the Sunday was the lead semi-final and final to finish off four pretty epic days of climbing.
Yeah, and then also running in around that, you had the Masters events happening for the 40 and over climbers and also the Open Bs. So there wasn't just the Open As running, the route setters and the organisers had to also cater for four other categories.
Yeah.
Exhausting. Yeah, that's crazy. I've actually volunteered. I think it's a good thing to put in. I volunteered on Saturday to help because it was a year that I could. You know, I wasn't competing in all the disciplines and I wanted to. And Audrey was happy playing with all the kids there. Your child, yeah. Remy.
I think it was awesome to see you on the other side.
It's hard. Cool. Like for anybody out there, any competitors, please volunteer when you get the chance to because you realize just how much you need to wee and eat when you have to hold a stopwatch for 3 hours for men's qualification route one and how much, you know, what you're doing is going to have an impact on a competitor's position in an event and how you don't want to stuff it up.
That's right.
And that's why it's good to have people that have competed before.
Yeah.
Because, you know what's happening and you know how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you understand.
Totally. And the speed climbing, you know, it's like you can... So I was helping attach and detach the speed climbers. Sounds so simple.
Can you imagine if you let go of it?
Really stressful. I couldn't let go of the thing. And also you don't want to disrupt the athletes and you want to let them stay in the zone and you want to give them some encouragement but not until they've come down off their run. And Yeah, I think so. All athletes, volunteer, please.
Yeah, and there's so many other benefits too because you're really part of the competition when you're volunteering. You know, you may not be able to compete for one reason or another, but if you can go there and volunteer, you're really right in the thick of things, and I find it really interesting.
You
and
get
really
to wear
exciting.
A cool t-shirt.
Yeah,
and you get given t-shirt. Snacks.
Yeah,
snacks and water.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, go-go juice for all the good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we're thinking we'll do a bit of a wrap up of what's happened with the results and a couple of standout performances. There was a few people that I saw throughout the weekend. You guys perhaps did as well of you're like, oh, wow, that person's really come through and done a pretty stellar job. And yeah, just a bit of a shout out for them as well. So the podium for the Open A female was Charlotte Garden, Angie Scarth-Johnson and Oceana McKenzie.
For bouldering.
That was for the bouldering. Charlotte is a little asterisk. Although she has called Australia home for a while now, she is a POM. And so Lucy is the third place getter in the Open A females. In the male category, the podium was myself, Tom Farrell, and then Kozuro Hajimazede. He did tell us on the last day how to pronounce his last name, but we can't remember. He is a Iranian foreign national that is the coach up in Queensland at the moment.
And a gun climber, gun boulderer.
And extremely good.
All disciplines.
Awesome. Yeah. Very talented.
So in the end, we ended up on the podium was, for the Australian podium, was Sam Bowman, myself in second, and Tom Farrell winning the Open A male bouldering competition.
He's got a few of those under his belt.
Oh, doesn't he just? Probably. Yeah, more than he's got fingers and toes, I reckon.
I reckon so.
Speed climbing was the next event to finish over the weekend. The event podium was Sam Lavender in third, Chase Gatlin in second, and Ben Abel in first, which is pretty impressive considering he had a busted pulley in his pinky finger.
Yeah, and really smart through. Tactically for Ben because he knew that he wouldn't be able to perform his best in lead and boulder, but he was really counting on getting a good speed place to get that overall qualification, and he did. So
yeah, he's
shout out to him.
Very, very good with his speed climbing.
Mm.
Chase Gatlin is a foreign national from Kiwiland. So Ned Middlehurst ended up in third place in that event. For the men, and in the women's, We had in, here we go, third place, Alyssa Andrus. Ella Easton and Oceana McKenzie came first in the speed for the women. And quick side note, she was the became the first female to go under 9 seconds.
That's right. She it's unofficial.
In Australia.
Yeah, it's unofficial because the wall isn't a certified wall. It's very accurate, but it's not certified. So it's not an official time, but yeah, under 9 seconds, it's her fastest time. It's Australian female's fastest time. And it's great to see those times just dropping rapidly. You know, Sam Lavenders, who came second in speed, is our national record holder officially.
Yeah.
Oceana's got the official female record. So that's been a real amazing thing that's happened because of this Olympic qualification format, is that our speed times have just gone down and down and down. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, it seems like it's been...
Speedball's getting a lot of action, hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the lead event was the last event to finish. It was about 6:30 on Sunday evening. In the males was Cosro in third position, James Cassay in second position, and I was lucky enough to be able to get to enough holds up to win, which was pretty rad. It was my first national lead in either open or junior, so that was
good job,
pretty
oh,
rad.
Wow, that's
really?
Cool. Yeah.
and Tom... with Cosro being Iranian, we've got Tom Farrell came in third.
On the Australian podium.
In the Australian podium.
Fantastic.
For the female podium, we had Lucy Sterling in third place, Angie Scarth-Johnson in second, and Oceana McKenzie in first.
So Oshi got the trifecta.
She got the triple, which was
Quinella, because she got overall as well.
So. Oh, yeah. Overall as well.
I thought Lucy climbed that route beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah. She used her Queensland skills to get
the knee bar. Her knee barring. Yeah.
Days in Coolum Cave paid off. That one.
So the overall ranking at the end of the weekend is
It can only be for Australians because the overall was for Australian athletes.
Yes. So we have Sam Lavender in third place, Tom Farrell in second, and myself in first, which was pretty rad. Awesome. I was pretty happy with that. But
just,
I reckon it was...
your second first place in the weekend then.
Yeah, exactly. Still trying to catch up to Osh. I reckon, though, overall on the weekend, I was pretty blown away by the juniors. They did an amazing job. Hugo Hornshaw was extremely impressive.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah.
He's made a
list.
Massive leap,
He has.
It's been fantastic.
Both outdoor climbing and indoor climbing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's improved heaps, and he's definitely one of our big prospects for the youth team next year, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
And he's also keen to try out some senior World Cups next year as well. So.
Yeah. And then also Leah Jeffries and Ella Easton, I thought, did pretty amazing jobs.
Ella was a real standout.
Yeah, she's another one who's made a huge leap forward. Leah as well, but Ella's, I think, in this past year has really stepped up a huge amount. So it's really good to see them putting it on the wall. But it was really, it was a competition of two extremes. It was either the kids smashing it or the, we'll call them the more mature climbers at the other end smashing it. The Amanda Yu and Cassay and Al Price. And
it's funny.
It's good to see Al Price come over.
Yeah. So it's fantastic to see that at both ends of the spectrum, we've got these people just really giving us a good solid crack and still climbing, really well, or coming up and climbing really well.
I think, can I just jump in and put Carly on the spot and say, we're trying to take Australian climbing to an international level. And athletes have been trying to do that for years just on their own. But, we need gyms and setters and holds. And, we've got our first set of proper IFSC speed holds now instead of the other ones. So what does it take when you're route setting for an event like this to set routes that are going to help lift athletes to a level where they can actually win an Olympic gold medal?
Yeah, okay. So I'll start with just how I do it at Villawood.
Yeah.
Is just kind of like the last 6 months, I've kind of realised that, our facility is one of the best lead facilities in Australia.
Yeah.
So I've just been setting harder routes. Every time we reset a lead war, I'm like, right, we're going to have something that's 28, 29 plus.
Yep.
And basically from the ground, it's on. And so then people can come and train. And there's enough routes there to do laps on and for so forth. And then my other thought as head route setter, thought, well, I'm just going to make it hard from the ground. You know, you're in a World Cup. You're not going to get a 25 up to the first few bolts, you know. So my thought for this Nationals was I'm just going to turn it on from the ground.
Yeah.
And I think in the past it's always been like, oh, you know, let's get the guys off the ground. And because you're setting for such a wide lot of climbers, you know, there's, you know, you've got some people.
You're 28 male, open male competitors, for example. Some of them are 15. And
yeah, you've got probably people that are climbing, you know, 24s.
Yeah.
To guys that are climbing 35. So,
yeah. Well, it's in a World Cup, you're setting knowing that nobody's going to show up unless they can on-site 8A at least.
Yeah.
At the very least. So,
yeah. But then, yeah, so I was just like, nope, this Nationals, it's going to be hard from the ground because we need to make sure that we get the best in this top eight that was going to get chosen. And to do that, it needs to be on from the ground.
Yeah.
That really struck me on not so much on the qualification routes because they're a little bit easier, but the semi-final route, it was hard from the very beginning.
For the first move.
Yeah. I looked at it and you're like, whoa, that's a hard move up to that big slopey hold. Yeah. And then I've got to do something weird with sketchy slopey feet. And it was unsettling before I left the ground. Whereas in the past, you look at it and go, oh, yeah, cool. Oh, yeah. I can make it up to draw seven. And then, you know, that looks like a bit of a rest. But, yeah, it was really awesome.
And because we had semis this time, so we don't normally have semis either, we could make the two qualifiers to set a little bit easier for the lower end of the field.
Yeah, and still you got a really good split.
Yeah. We did have... guys, there was five tops in qualies and two in girls, I think. So it was pretty good for us. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool to see basically the experiences that I had in the World Cups this year and the World Champs, which is my first experience in the adult World Cup. It was on from the ground, and to see that then come across into the Australian stuff was really rad.
But just even the holds that were used and the types of moves, and the routes looked
so we have been making an effort to get nice big looking holds and volumes and stuff.
That'd be investment as well.
It's investment,
huge investment. They're expensive.
They're like $300 to $500 a pop for some of those big things, aren't they?
Proper
money. Whereas you could get a set of 10 little resin edges for that much with change.
So you have to root for that much money on trims.
So to root setters, when you're setting boulders and roots for comps, do you sort of go at it with, okay, we're going to put this section here because it might mess with their mind a bit?
With lead, boulders definitely. You want it's problem solving.
Yeah.
So you want the athletes to be able to...
Like Amanda looks confused on that. We've set that well.
Yeah. But lead is a little bit different, you know. So you want all those climbers up the top. So then, you know, you've got to get them up there. So you've got to be able to do that. And so it's more of a resistance route.
Yeah.
With a few kind of bouldery elements in it.
Yeah.
These days. Yeah.
It's interesting seeing the dinos now. Leg roots. Heart in throat moments.
Yeah, or a little kind of step down with your foot onto a feature or...
Yeah.
Yeah, we try not to make it too extreme as in a bouldering comp, but it is cool for the crowd to see those moves.
Yeah. It is commitment.
Yeah.
And it does, as a competitor, as you tied in, it's unsettling to go, I know I can do this move, but...
And the girls had one, their little kind of pop dino was at the third bolt, so... Mm.
Was that on the...
That was a double-handed dino. That was like...
Yeah. And that was in semis?
That was finals.
In the finals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was
But
two.
The taller ones could just sort of pop through, whereas the shorter ones...
I was going two hands.
Had to two hands.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, it definitely rattles you and requires you to then have to compose yourself and get on with the next 10 quick draws because otherwise you you're going to stress out.
Mm. Quick draw at a time and just be like,
yeah,
what's next?
Yeah. So, yeah, that was really cool to see the Australian standard come up to that international one. And I think overall, over the whole weekend, the route setting was really, really well done.
Mm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think
across the boulders, all the women's boulders were amazing.
The speed route was done really well.
Yeah. That did take me a while, actually.
I think it would be worth just mentioning that we've now got the proper holds that we said before, and just how speed works, because I think a lot of people find that quite confusing, and the results can be quite not misleading, but it just, I think people think of it in a boulder format or in a lead format where it's whoever gets to the top in the fastest, but it's not, because it's a duel. So, you could have two of the fastest athletes against each other, number one and two, almost, kind of, and the second fastest person might not make it through to the next round because they get knocked out.
Yeah, once it gets to the semi-final, it's a head-to-head knockout rather than based on speed.
Yeah, the round of 16, it goes to knockout. And so you'll see sometimes a climber will slip, or if there's a fall or something, the other climber will slow down and just make sure they get to the top, because the time's not
Doesn't
important.
Matter.
It's just whoever touches the buzzer at the top.
So everyone gets ranked, first of all, from two speed runs.
That's right. So your fastest time is your qualifying time.
Yep.
And then from there, you're ranked, and the top 16 go head-to-head, and it sort of spread so that one race is 16. So the prize for being the fastest qualifier is you get to race the slowest.
Yeah.
Two races, 15, and so on. And then from there, it follows a tree down until you get your fastest two to race off for gold. And your two losers in the semifinals, the round of four, race off for the bronze medal.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see just how much a foot slip or missing the buzzer at the top, Tom Farrell did.
Yeah.
Can make a massive difference.
That's
and
right.
trying to go, I know I've watched Tom train for speed, and you can go as fast as you like when you're in practice, but when you've got when you can't false start, because a false start is instant elimination from the competition, that you come last or equal last,
or wherever you are in the rankings if it's head to head, so you just lose that round.
And so if you add all of that on, and then, the head-to-head, often people don't quite... It seems that they don't go quite as fast to begin with, and then as they move through the rounds, they get faster and faster.
Yeah, although the fastest time of the day was from Cosro, and he was eliminated in the
round of eight,
semis. Round of eight, for the quarters,
Yeah, and it was... it's exciting to watch. I think anyone that has a gripe against speed climbing needs to actually show up and watch one of the speed climbing competitions, because it is high drama.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
The foot slips, the route, it's 100% there all the time. You know exactly what you're up against. And so some people think that that's not really, that it's boring, or that you just kind of know what you're doing. But that also adds in this element of pressure, because you know what you're meant to be able to do.
And
any little foot slip or anything like that is huge.
Massive consequences.
Races are lost in a hundredth of a second or something.
Yeah, like it is really exciting to watch. And it's over, the whole event is over so quickly. It's like really amazing how quickly that, you go through your qualification rounds, but then once you hit the final rounds, it's just like, just race after race and all of a sudden the whole thing's done. It's just, it must be a crazy life being a speed climber, I think, because it's just all happened so quickly.
Mm.
Like you think their event takes half the time it takes the 100 meter final.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I think the overall world record for the men's is 5.45 seconds or something. And Eri Susanti Rahayu, who's the Indonesian female speed climber, just became the first female to go under 7 seconds.
Under 7,
which was crazy. It's awesome.
Just incredibly quick.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
I'm sure the speed climbers watch the 100 meters and they go, after 5 seconds, they start switching off and doodling or something like that.
Yeah,
getting bored.
Exactly. Yeah. one thing, Carly, that I have often wondered through the comps is when you've obviously set the routes and the boulders before the competition starts. They're done days or weeks, perhaps, in advance. When it comes to the semis and then the finals, are you watching what's happening in the qualification routes to see perhaps what standard people are at and see what moves they're struggling with?
So we set the finals first, so we're the freshest to test it. And then they kind of just get left up. And then we might kind of go back to them later on throughout the 3 days of setting. And yeah, so we're definitely looking at results, and then for the semis, you kind of just leave them because you don't really have much, because there was a few tops, so you kind of want the split. And then the coming to finals, you don't want to like tweak it and make the wrong decision. And so it's always best to just go with your gut feeling. Be like, no, I tested this.
So it's rare that you would make a tweak on the actual day of the event.
Yeah. We did the night before because we actually had time to get our shoes out and hop on them. So the semis we made a little bit harder. And we knew because it was the semis, we had another climb in the climbers.
So if you'd spat all of them off at that third bolt, I think it was the third bolt where it was really tricky.
Yeah.
If they hadn't managed. Yeah, because I think the first.
That would have been a bit disappointing personally because it was my route. But
it was a very good one.
But it's funny because, I mean, you know, you're watching it and you see, I think there was 9 people got progressively higher but not much higher than each other. But really, if you put that into a World Cup kind of, not quite World Cup, but almost World Cup, that's about right.
Yeah.
Like if you watch the World Cups, lots of the like the lower ranked climbers, the people that end up lower ranked, end up getting spat off quite early on a route.
Yeah.
And it must be hard as a route setter sitting there watching it and you've watched 10 people go out and they've all fallen off low. Not get panicky. But you've still got 16 of the 16 hardest climbers still to come out. Yeah. So, you know, you're not even halfway, but... I know, I'm watching
you. As soon as number 10 went past that hole, I was just like, oh, thank God.
Oh, no, I think I was pale and my heart raced until... I think Tom spent a minute 40 at that move.
I was watching you in the crowd. I'm like, oh, hope a man doesn't
It could have been his Olympic. But, I mean, if he wasn't good enough to make it through that, then he's not good enough to make it through that.
I stopped there for a moment, well, for a minute 40, and I actually had this point when you're like, I'm going to count how many quick draws I am up. I'm 3 up.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to fall off at the third quick draw. This is what a bummer. I'm just like kooking it.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, it was a hard move. But it was really good there because you had to then compose yourself. Like we were talking about before, you had to compose yourself.
It was really unsettling. You could see the climbers who could get it back mentally and those who were just totally panicked after that.
And it's a great way to create a split, see who can pull it together or who's going to hyperventilate and, cook their arms and all that. I often think that it's the hardest job in climbing is to be the route setter because if you cook it and it's a bad set, then you've done a terrible job. And if you do it a fantastic job, then you've just done your job.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's pretty stressful. Seems thankless like, and
when the final start, I'm like, I don't know whether to go hide or stay and watch. I'm just like, oh, you know, this is all on us, you know.
Yeah, because you're the ones putting on the show.
They make the event, Without good route setters, climbing comps are awful.
Yeah,
with good route setters, they're brilliant. They're
and
fantastic.
You always hate the route setting that you can't do. If there's a problem you can't do in a boulder comp, you're like, I mean, you know, in your South West titles, we had 2 run and jumpy kind of problems, and it's like, ugh, don't like the route setting. It wasn't true, I did like the route setting, but they were just not my style of problem.
Yeah.
So I then went away from that event and learned how to do those problems.
There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
I kind of, feel like I've been doing it for enough years that I can get it right each time. But I think a little bit of luck does come into it when, you know, late at night.
Trusting your gut feeling as well, trusting yourself. Because I think you see it, you know, I've seen it before where route setters have panicked at the last minute and changed things and it never works out well. It's always...
It's like changing that answer on your exam, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. It was always
And you're reflecting on the other guys on the team too. Mm. And I was working with Scotty and we've been...
Scotty Pritchard,
yeah. And we've been together in a team so often that we were relying on each other with the, you know, oh, what do you think? Should we move it closer, you know? And if one of us says, nah, let's just leave it, we left it.
Yeah,
just because we knew each other.
You got that trust.
We got the trust,
So what kind of goes into, like, this is the biggest nationals that Australia's kind of had in terms of
biggest open nationals.
Yeah, open nationals. It's four consecutive days, high stakes because it's Olympic qualifications. People's dreams are essentially on the line. How do you go about creating that sort of competition? Like, I know that there was a bit of... In the beginning, we were trying to work out where we could hold it. I say we. Sport Climbing Australia were trying to work out where they can hold it.
Because yeah. I guess there's not many gyms that can do it, are there?
No. We were in discussion with them for a while about, you know, hosting it at Villawood. We had just done Youth Nationals, which is almost the same thing as Opens, but twice as big.
Because yeah. Over 3 days. Okay.
Yeah.
Less time, more competitors.
Yeah, we had like 360 kids or something for that one. So it was just crazy. So we had just done it this year, and it's like, but, you know, when you have the best facility in the country, you do have to host these events.
Yeah. We've got two facilities. It's at St. Peter's, and then you guys are running the lead and speed days. To organize all that together, from the back end point of view, there's mass amounts of logistics to be able to even just get people talking to each other, get sponsors lined up, to get the competitors all registering on the websites, to get, you know, route setters in who are doing their time, and to get the judges and all that together. It's kind of just this crazy, thankless task.
Yeah, and it really comes down to Sport Climbing Australia. There's a board, but basically most of those tasks were done by two people, Roman and Naomi.
Yeah.
And so they had to organize everything from the back end, from the initial negotiations about where to hold it, which isn't easy when you've got a deadline breathing down your neck to hold an Australian event, to be a qualifier for Oceania, to be a qualifier for the Olympics. And then they need to then, you know, find the facilities, they need to organize the routes. As you say, there's the whole list of things, the judges, you know, trying to get volunteers to judge bouldering on a Thursday and Friday in Sydney. It's not easy, you know.
Yeah, everyone's at work.
Yeah. So, no, hats off to them. You know, it's not an easy role being in that position, because everyone wants more. Everyone wants everything to be at the international standard. And, you know, I think we're getting as close and closer and closer all the time, you know. But they did a fantastic job of organising all that, moving the whole show on the Friday night over to Villawood, and then resetting up everything again. They, you know, they also had people doing the live stream. They had so many different things at play. So, hats off to them. But also all the volunteers who do put their hand up, and, you know, even if you are just holding a stopwatch or clipping someone in or judging, it's all what makes the machine run. So, you know, it could not be done without this massive amount of volunteer hours that go into it.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible to see just how many people are involved. Like, Kip Newing's making the speed climbing program.
Yeah. He wrote the program for the speed. He got the pads, the timer. He's done everything from, you know, bits and pieces and things that he's bought at you know, J-Car Electronics. It's pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just kind of twiddling away at night. Well, not twiddling, but, like, you know, using the skills that he's got to help progress our sport and to bring us into an international realm.
Yeah, and it's really those skills that, you know, so many people in our... everyone in our climbing community has skills in different things, and you just never know what people have got that they can used to contribute to the sport, because, you know, like Kip's doing that really hands-on practical stuff in terms of designing a speed system, but then there's other people out there who have more administrative skills that they can use to help in other ways, or write grant applications. So there's, you know, if you've got skills and you know you feel like you want to help the sport grow, put your hand up, because, you know, we need, the more people we can get, the easier it's going to be for those who are doing it at the moment.
There's so many passionate athletes that want to be there and do the best that they can do in a competition. And, you know, we have this dream of going and competing for Australia at the World Cups and World Championships and now the Olympics. None of that can happen without the gyms getting behind our sport, without the route setters, without the volunteers that are there. Like, just none of it happens without this huge volunteer base, essentially, to
Yeah, so be really nice to them on the day.
Let us achieve our dreams.
Because they are overworked, not paid, and usually hungry, thirsty, and with a full bladder. So,
yeah,
be nice to them.
Yeah, completely.
Where do we see this? So, this is now the Oceania team has been picked for Australia.
The eight people have qualified, eight males and eight females, but there's still two wild cards in male and female that need to be decided.
Yes, there's injury wild cards that are in place.
There must be a fair few hats thrown in that ring.
Don't know.
We should, I should mention, at least for Campbell Harrison was missing from the men's event. And there was a few others, I think, in the females event.
Like Claire Langmore, she just had a baby.
Yeah. Roxy pulled out.
Yeah, and Sarah from...
Sarah Davis.
Who won Boulder Nationals last year.
Yep, she was injured. There's a few people that were missing this year that will be...
Hoping for an injury wild card.
Very much, applying for the injury wild card for the Oceania event. I know Campbell had in Japan, in between World Cups, he's done something to his ankle. I think he's fractured his talus or something in a couple of different spots and about 2 weeks before the event. So
Can get back in action and on the wall and climbing well before the Continental Championships.
Yeah. Also, there's the people that came ninth and 10th as well. They have every right to put in a wild card as well.
Yeah, so it's not just if you're injured, it's if you've missed out. Like maybe... You could argue that, you know, you came 16th overall, but it was only because you fell off in the and were disqualified in the speed at the start and you didn't actually get a decent speed run in, even though your best time was normally 8 seconds or something, you know. So if you had that sort of a case to put.
Oceania, that's now the next big thing. Then the Olympics. I think it'd be silly to not talk about what the Olympics means for our sport and then I guess the progression for our sport. From here, in terms of Australian kind of competition climbing, where do you guys see the Olympics sitting with competition climbing?
It's already made a huge difference. You know, you can only see that from a couple of weekends ago at our nationals. You know, just the number of climbers who were, you know, really enthused. Maybe people who would have been like, oh yeah, you know, I'm probably, you know, ready to step back a little bit. They're really enthused and keen. All the young climbers are really keen. You know, we were struggling to get enough people for a semi-final at a speed event a few years ago, whereas now it's packed and people are just getting faster and faster. So already it's having a huge impact on the competitors. It's had a small impact on the amount of money that Sport Climbing Australia can receive. It's still very, very minimal, but at least, you know, there is something there now.
Is that from the government?
It's from the government. But because we're still not a full Olympic sport and also they look at prospects for medals and all that sort of thing. So we really need to prove ourselves.
So we need an Aussie to win a medal.
We need an Aussie to get a medal and then we'll be swimming. We'll be we won't be quite swimming. We'll never get that sort of money.
If anyone from the Australian government is listening, we do have medal contenders in this country. It's just that none of us are able to train in the way that the international medal contenders can.
Because so give us some
everyone
money, please.
Is working full time to pay off their mortgage and do all sorts of other things. We just do not have the time to train like the others train. So,
but that's not true actually, because if you do, if you end up being the one that wins the Olympic spot, you're going to go as hard as you can at a medal anyway.
Yeah, but I think the training to win a gold, Olympic gold medal doesn't start 3 months out from the competition.
No, it starts,
you know, the swimmers have been swimming from the beginning. They've been doing laps in the pool and that's where that starts. And I think if we can get that into our sport, that real grassroots, it starts at the beginning and we've got a really strong progression for the 8, 10, 15 year olds or whatever it is that come in, like you've got this space for them to be able to progress, because that's how it happens. You don't just do it in the 6 months prior because you're now the one that's been selected.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that it does take, like, you know, to develop a team where we can have high performing athletes. Know, which is the ultimate goal, is that every World Cup we're getting Australians in the finals and on the podium, and we've got a variety of people doing it rather than a couple of standouts. I think we need that sort of culture that we're getting high performers from very early ages, and it's just seen as something that we're good at as a nation. But I think that we can still have, at the moment, we can still have those really outstanding standout performers who do perform really well at events. And, you know, if the Olympics is one of those events, then great.
What does the future hold for climbing in Australia, climbing
worldwide, the Olympics? You just came back from the Institute of Sport, didn't you, Rob? So you've probably got a good little bird's eye view of what the future can hold.
Yeah, I think it's because we had the first engagement I had with the coaching team as a youth coach now was to go to the AIS, and we had a really good couple of days just talking through the plans for the year and where to in the future. And it was really exciting. You know, I think we've got a really good team of coaches now. We've got good, you know, some really good people with good coaching experience, lots of good climbing experience and competition experience. And it's exciting. And, you know, we're working, as I said, you know, with really limited means, and it's just looking at how we can best help the athletes as coaches with what we've got. So, yeah, I think it's exciting. It's only going to get bigger because climbing is going to get more and more exposure, and more people are getting into climbing and really understanding just what a fantastic sport it is. And I think we're well placed to set things up for the future.
I think we've got the facilities now as well, and we've got the route setters, and we've got all the ducks lined up. I think there's a pretty bright future ahead of Australian climbing.
And we do. I think we've also crossed that line, Khalid. No, this being, you know, a top route setter in the country, where gyms are, you know, like reluctant to put anything up that's too hard. I think gyms now are starting to see value. I'm currently leading the way at Villawood, but to put things up that are really hard and that they know that there are people who will come in to try those boulders or climbs.
Yeah, you're only going to get a couple people coming in and actually hopping on those routes. But it's really cool to see those people in the gym, and your regulars are watching them and they're like, oh, wow, you know, that's like a 31 and it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's creating aspirations for juniors. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. They're like, you know, oh, gosh, there's this level that I could be at. Like, I thought I was going well, but there's the next.
And if you don't have those routes in the gym, then your regulars, they're not going to get better, you know.
No,
you have to have the
exactly.
Yeah, you put in a false ceiling.
But I think I think another big thing that we need to see happen here, which hopefully we've got the wheels in motion for, is to see some of our route setters get more international experience.
Yeah.
Because route setters in the past have found it really hard to break into the IFSC scene. It's sort of very much been a bit of a closed book and closed club. Whereas they did reach out this year, the IFSC, and ask for applications. We've had a couple of Australian route setters put in their applications.
Really awesome. Who were
really
they,
good
Robbie?
To see.
Which Australian
one of them sitting right next to me. It's Carly, and the other was Scotty.
Awesome.
Pritchard. So yeah,
that would be very exciting.
If we could get, you know, one or both of them with a bit of experience.
It's very intimidating, but I think it would be exciting.
Yeah. It would be terrifying, but it'd be amazing.
And I'm totally
so
biased,
but
you guys are ready for it. It's what, you know, it's what you guys need as your next step.
Yeah,
that would be
and to
incredible.
learn some more skills to bring back to set routes for the Aussies and on the same level would be really cool.
Yeah, you'd have to say that would help the Australian athletes to perform just that bit better again.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And not only the athletes, it would help the other route setters, because all that knowledge would be disseminated. Yep. It would help the officials, because they'd be getting feedback on how, you know, how things are done at international comps from the route setters, you know, because they work really closely with the route setters.
Mm. It'd be the same with our judges and jury presidents too, to get them over there.
Absolutely,
you know, get their world ticket would be...
Oh, that'd be terrifying. It's one thing to timekeep and like help on a speed wall at Villawood, at Nationals. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
That'd be terrifying.
Yeah, appeals going all over the place and you're just like, oh, I didn't mean to.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming and having a chat.
And for everything you do for the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
fun.
Thankless and amazing, and just we can't have everything that we have without you guys and everyone else involved. So thank you so much. Thanks for listening in, everyone. Jump on the Instagram, give us a follow, subscribe on your podcast app. Thank Audrey and Remy, who you've probably heard scrabbling about in the background, for being so good. They've been getting up to all sorts of mischief. And Audrey's bedroom is going to be
eating biscuits.
Yeah, Audrey's bedroom is going to be a mess full of.
It's our bedroom, actually.
No, it's even worse. Anyway, thanks everyone, and I hope this gave you a bit of an insight into the significance of the Nationals, a bit of indoor climbing gossip, and catch you on the next episode.